Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the second meeting of the HITECH Annual Report Workgroup. We will call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Carolyn Peterson?
I'm here.
Mary Mary?
Present.
Christina Carballo?
Here.
Brett Oliver? Not yet. And Chesley Richards? Okay. We'll see if Brett or Chesley joined in a little bit. At this time, I will turn it over to Carolyn and Aaron.
All right, I'll start with Aaron. So welcome everybody to meeting number two. Pleased to help host this, co-chair it with my esteemed co-chair, Carolyn Peterson. And what we wanted to do today was sort of just talk through sort of what we sort of touched on last meeting, as well as sort of the overview here and structure. As we mentioned in the last discussion, this is the first time this annual report is coming through, so we're also kind of, it's a work in process. So you'll see a lot of things as we've spoken about maybe the next, you know, over the weeks and months that go on, you know, a better graphic, a better pictorial, a better diagram as this is all put together. So I appreciate everybody's attendance today and working through this. In addition to, we also wanted to start some discussion and really talking to some of the meat of the report and any ideas and ideation that will go into the final product as time goes on. But we'll begin all those processes today. Next slide, please. All right, so kind of our overall workgroup scope. Again, this is the workgroups are to inform, contribute, and review the draft and final versions of the HITECH annual report to submit to the Secretary and to Congress each year. And of course, really, this becomes our metric, our rubric for how are we doing against the issues that we have been charged to look at, as well as anything that we have eventually sought permission to seek out more information on and how are we doing against that as time goes on. So again, you know, this is all part of 21st Century Cures, looking really at these priority target areas, which we will go into detail later on. Again, sort of that assessment of health IT infrastructure and advancements, analysis of all the gaps in the policies and resources of those target areas, and as I said earlier, some ideation for potential HITECH activities that we would go back and ask for permission to look at. Next slide, please. Let's go ahead and keep going. All right, so as noted in section 4003 of 21st Century Cures, we really are looking at those four areas, interoperability being really key these day and age, sort of that HIT infrastructure allowing for the seamless exchange, access, and use of health information, subject that's very near and dear to my heart, privacy and security, and making sure that we promote and emphasize the use of that and protection of privacy and security. And then patient access, really making sure we're helping to look at and work through any roadblocks or ideas or questions around facilitation of secure access by an individual and their caregivers. And then last, as I mentioned earlier, any other target area that we can ask to look at with appropriate notice to Congress. Next slide. All right, so our objectives for 2018, one, we really want to publish proposed regulation for implementation of the health IT provisions. To drive access to clinical data, really by advancing proposals related to APIs. And then number two, really identifying behaviors that are not considered information blocking, really which will help assist the OIG and their enforcement of the Cures Act that prohibits information blocking. Second objective here is looking at the TEF, the Trusted Exchange Framework, and really publishing that draft to improve data sharing across disparate health information networks. And third bullet here, really consideration of the standards and implementation specifications to support priority uses of health IT based on HITECH recommendations and encouraging all stakeholders to implement and use those applicable specific interoperability needs that they seek to address. These are really three tremendous objectives for FY18 that the HITECH has been very busy on. And so we look forward to being able to report back how we've been able to measure against those. Next slide. So for fiscal year 2018, there's several benchmarks that the ONC has identified that we really want to look at here. One is for proposed regulation covering APIs, information blocking, and other health IT topics. Really the possibility of HITECH activity by the end of the year to be in line with the schedule of publication of certification interoperability enhancements proposed rule. Number two, the draft TEF, the Trusted Exchange Framework, have that published. Again, released on it was released on January 5th for public comment. The HITECH is charged with making recommendations, submitting those recommendations to the national coordinator within this year. And then number three, the standards and specifications to support priority use cases. This is really the U.S. CDI, the core data for interoperability and proposed expansion process. The HITECH was charged with review and feedback of this to the national coordinator in FY18, and the HITECH was charged with making recommendations on priority uses of health IT and associated standards implementation. For those of you who have been part of previous meetings, you've heard of all the detailed work going into this, so it's exciting to be able to report back the rolling up of the sleeves and the making of the sausage that's been going on for all of this. Next slide. All right, so I'm going to let Carolyn take it from this point forward.
Okay, so we have here what we're calling the 2D crosswalk of priority target areas for this fiscal year. The actual, if we look at all of these things taken together, it's more than two planes, but we're trying to kind of flatten it out to make it a little easier to understand. We have the ONC objectives. That's publishing the proposed regulation, publishing the draft trusted exchange framework, and looking at standards and specifications. There's the ONC benchmarks. Because of the language of the 21st Century Cures Act, benchmark is a term that has to be used, but these are actually more baselines in practice because we're in the first year. So that's the proposed regulation, publishing draft trusted exchange framework publication, and the standards and specifications considered. In effect, have we done our objectives? And then we have the HITECH charges, which is the trusted exchange framework, the U.S. core data for interoperability that work group has also previously worked. And we've got the interoperability standards priorities that's underway now, and then any additional initiatives that we've determined. We have the next slide, please. So here is a 3D crosswalk that tries to kind of give you a better visual sense of how all of these things fit together. The Rubik's Cube is, I think, is a familiar kind of way of thinking about things, showing the various groups of priorities and objectives and how they kind of all engage together. There are several interest groups, our key stakeholders, that had, of course, another layer to all of the patients, providers, researchers, public health organizations, and others. So it's even more complex than this Rubik's Cube image, but hopefully this gives you a better sense of what we're trying to address. We have the next slide, please. So now we'll get into the work group discussion, having reviewed our charges and kind of where we're going. Could I have the next slide, please? So the first aspect that we need to consider is how we're structuring this report to help us kind of identify what we need to put in and ensure that we have a checklist we can follow to ensure that we get it all done as we work through it. So the sections we're looking at would be first the executive summary, followed by an overview, a review of HITECH's progress in fiscal year 2018, a landscape analysis of health IT infrastructure, a gap analysis of health IT infrastructure, then some recommendations for addressing the infrastructure gaps, some suggestions for additional HITECH initiatives, perhaps things we can look at addressing next year and perhaps even into the future further. Whatever conclusion or conclusions we have, and then appendices that include any extra information that we can provide to support our analyses and recommendations. Could I have the next slide, please? So the landscape analysis structure we're proposing has an overview and some other parts. We look at the legislative requirements on the current ONC and HITECH priorities. And then for each of those priority target areas, some background and the current state. Essentially looking at the recent progress for some of these different topics and showing examples from stakeholder groups. Could I have the next slide, please? The gap analysis structure that we're proposing for each of those priority target areas, the gaps identified, as well as the opportunities that can help us plan work for future years and get a sense of what should be on the agenda coming up. And also, of course, recommendations for addressing those gaps and opportunities. Next slide. So we've got some content ideas for the landscape analysis, some interoperability topics. For example, ONC's proposed regulation covering APIs, information blocking, and other health IT topics. There's the draft trusted exchange framework, the U.S. core data for interoperability, and the standards and implementation specifications to support priority uses of health IT. So we have some thinking to do in terms of what other interoperability topics should be included and what are some examples of progress among stakeholder groups. Then continuing on to the privacy and security topics, we have HL7's Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, FHIR, standard for transferring electronic medical records. There's the OAuth 2.0 security profiles for authentication, privacy and security protections for patient-generated health data, behavioral health information sharing, health information sharing for research purposes, and of course we want to consider what other privacy and security topics there might be, and again, examples of progress among the stakeholders. We have also patient access to information topics that could include things like the Blue Button initiatives, including My Healthy Data at CMS, data collection using mobile and wearable devices, use and sharing of patient-generated health data, and emerging platforms for data sharing. And again, do we have other topics, and what examples of progress can we mention? And then for the gap analysis, looking at some content areas for the report, with interoperability topics, the expansion of priority use cases to meet the needs of additional care settings and stakeholder groups, technology maturity, you know, and the timeliness of guidelines and development, data quality, provenance, and usefulness, usability metrics for health information exchange, and incentives for change across stakeholder groups. And, of course, we have any interest in other topics that come up and examples of concerns that come up among our stakeholders. For privacy and security in the gap analysis, we have variability of information sharing policies across states, HIPAA and confidentiality of substance use disorder patient records, regulation implications and education, granular levels of consent to share and disclose information, implications of the European Union's GDPR and Privacy Shield, implications of the California Consumer Privacy Act of 2018, and perhaps any others that we become aware of, you know, during this time frame, and widespread adoption of cybersecurity frameworks. Next slide, please. With regard to patient access to information topics, use of APIs to access available patient data, timeliness of planning activities and operational impact, net neutrality, infrastructure needs for underserved populations, and accessibility and usability of patient portals. Again, we're interested if you have other topics and looking for some examples of how this plays out among our stakeholders. And then we have some other questions related broadly to stakeholder groups. We're wondering if we should look at the interests of select stakeholder groups that could include patients, providers, researchers, public health, developers, payers and employers, and policymakers. should the interest of stakeholder groups become an organizing principle for the report? And if that's the case, should the content be categorized primarily by the priority target area or by the stakeholder groups? If we go with that priority target area approach, then we can include examples from stakeholder groups to illustrate the concerns and the progress in each area. If we take the stakeholder approach, then the priority target areas can be handled as cross-cutting themes throughout. Next slide, please. So we'll review our work plan and schedule. We've passed the kickoff, and today we're starting the outline of our landscape analysis and our gap analysis. We will be updating the HITAC in September and look to have a draft of the landscape analysis to work on in September, in about a month. Looking to take that final landscape analysis to HITAC in October. As we work on the draft of the gap analysis, which we will also take to HITAC in October. So September and October are going to be a bit of a push for us. We will be working on the draft of the progress report and be reporting that to HITAC in November, and then taking the final report out in December, reviewing that for HITAC, and then moving into January where we review the final and get that to ONC so they can present that to Congress. Next slide, please. So here's our meeting schedule. Today we're at the 24th of August. We've got one meeting in September, one in October, one in November, and one in December. We can also consider meeting additionally if we need to do that, or if we want to have smaller subgroups that work on specific aspects. I suggest we consider that today and try to wrap our arms around what we think would be helpful, you know, so we can plan, because we'll have holidays coming up and meeting schedules and other things that could make it more challenging. And then in the winter, that final annual report will be completed. And in the spring, we'll start on your report for fiscal year 2019. Next slide, please. And then the full committee, this is another way of looking at the thing we just covered. We've got a progress report in September. Then in October, we've got the final landscape and gap analyses to review. In November, a final progress report. And then in January, the final annual report reviewed. In February, that moves on through ONC, going to Congress in March. Next slide, please. So I think are we going to do the public comment now, or do we want to have some discussion, Lauren?
Oh, no, we have that reserved for later in the call, so we wanted to just open it up for discussion now.
Okay, that's what I figured, but slide pass.
Yeah.
I better check.
So I see a few new folks that joined. I see Dr. Oliver, Fred Oliver Sharp joined, I believe. And so do we want to do a quick roll call to see if any of the folks that joined late are here?
Great. Thanks, Catch Aaron. So do we have Brett on the line?
Yes, I apologize for my late arrival.
That's okay. No worries. And Chesley Richards? Not yet. Okay. I think that's it for now. Thanks, Aaron.
Awesome. No problem. So, Carolyn, I would propose perhaps we go back to those few topic areas with the topics. Maybe we spend 5 minutes on each of those topics and see if there's any other, like around privacy, security, or interoperability, if there's anything else that jumps out to this work group that should be on this list. And I would say maybe no more than 5 minutes for each area. And let's just talk through it maybe as a start.
Yep, that sounds great.
We go back in the slides to where we're looking at those lists.
How do we feel about the structure of the annual report?
I
This is Brett. I like the overall structure. I thought it made a lot of sense. And most of the areas, just talking about just the general scaffolding there that's on the slide.
Yeah, I agree. This is great work that you guys put together, all of this. So thank you. It's a lot to digest right now.
Yeah. It is. And then
do it one bit at a time.
Exactly.
Right, and kudos. A lot of credit to the ONC team. They're rock stars in helping to synthesize this into things like Rubik's Cubes that make a lot of sense. So.
Yeah, and as we go through it, I'm kind of wondering, like, what – I know the ONC team will support a lot on this, but it's kind of – we have a few meetings and a lot of writing and work to do. So just kind of thinking how we're going to break it down and actually start kind of diving into all of this would be great to kind of discuss as well. I like the idea of – breaking it into sections and getting some subgroups together. I'd like to get an idea of kind of what ONC is drafting or putting together for us to see how we can actually start doing this. I know our high-tech meeting is in a week or two, right? So September 5th. I'm sure Erin and Carolyn, you've thought about this a lot. Pause there.
I think we do need to break this into chunks, which is how I wanted to spend a few minutes to kind of go through some of this and just sanity check, you know, as we look at like the gap analysis, you know, let's look at like section five there for a second. You know, each of those subject areas, you know, we just took a stab at topics that we know that are front and center that we should look at. It's, you know, one of those things that I think we need to spend a lot of time with and think it through. You know, do we bring in subject matter experts to speak with? Do we talk to folks from the high tech? Do we look at, you know, all these kinds of things? And then to your point, just continue to refine this down to a list that actually makes sense. You know, for me, I want to make sure that we allow everybody an opportunity to weigh in and think about this. Because to your point earlier, it's a lot of work that's been done. And then, you know, Brett, you know, I'll look to you. I really want to make sure that, you know, the topics that for sure are clinically impacting, I mean, they all are clinically impacting, but the ones that we know for a fact that would be front and center for a physician, clinician, we want to make sure that, you know, you're able to get those out in front and, you know, identify those so that we can make sure that we work through those as appropriate so that we have a full comprehensive picture.
Yeah, I love that approach. I think that's great.
Carolyn?
Yeah, I'm just looking at this, trying to think of anything else I've seen, read about, or heard about recently. I mean, I think information blocking is obviously a primary consideration, and hopefully we will have some further information from ONC in the next month or two that we can include in this, even if we need to add it. After we've done the review with HITAC, I think that's probably something people on the full committee would approve of, you know, knowing how important information blocking has been to the community.
Hey, Carolyn, this is Brett. One question. Would our report be an appropriate place to define some of these terms? Sometimes I hear, at least on a real basic provider sort of discussion, heard interoperability just as a term thrown around differently with different definitions as the different conversations arise. Is this an appropriate place to put in some definitions, like what we're talking about when we say certain terms, or is that covered somewhere else?
I think it would be a great idea to have an appendix section of all the various terms that we're using throughout the report. And where there are, should I say, dueling definitions, you know, or multiple definitions that are a bit different that have been used commonly, we can say, you know, A, B, and C, we're defining it as B for the purpose of this report. But yeah, I think that could be a helpful standalone section for people in the health IT community, even entirely outside the annual report.
Totally agree. This is Aaron. And you know, Brett, one of the things that we've done in other work groups was, even for terms that are still somewhat ambiguous, and I will say this sort of tongue-in-cheek, where we're speaking English, but people are hearing Greek, you know, it's helpful to note those things and say, hey, it would be helpful to come up with a more English term for this so that everybody can truly understand what we're talking about. So if there are words or there are terms that come up as this goes along that you feel that particularly, say, the clinical audience truly just doesn't understand what we're talking about and would be beneficial to come up with something else, this is the time to say, hey, let's make this work for everybody. That's the beauty of these work groups, is that, you know, that kind of data then synthesizes back up to the larger committee, and then it obviously becomes sort of common language. So as you hear of things or you see things, especially in provider land, please let us know.
Great, very great. Thanks. You know, just an example is when someone tells me they have interoperability and what they're talking about is a simple ADT feed. Well, to a provider, that doesn't really move the clinical needle. However, you can say, well, we've got interoperability between these two organizations. So, yeah, I think it'd be really helpful moving forward and then interpreting the report for sort of the average person.
Great thought. You know, that would be interesting to, and this is just an idea I'm throwing out there kind of ad hoc, Carolyn, is that, you know, we have the full report and then maybe there's a skinny report we could attach to it that truly just synthesizes it down in plain English for folks, because this can get very technical, especially as you look at, you know, the US CDI and other work that's been, phenomenal work that's been done. You know, all of us are in our own way in health world, you know, sort of geeky in our own way. We can get this very technical, but it would be helpful to have a very light version of this to attach, you know, in an appendix of some sort that just synthesizes this.
Yep. I mean, sometimes people try to use the executive summary in that way to a degree. We could think about a light version or perhaps a very basic slide deck. You know,
yeah, that's great.
Published on the, like, published on the website along with the report. And then people who, I don't know, are having local meetings or state meetings, whatever, can pull that down and say, yeah, this is where ONC went. This is where they're thinking about going, you know, and use it as a jumping point, jumping off point for their discussions and their advocacy.
Great thought. I love that.
Hopefully ONC isn't shooting dagger looks at me for thinking about more things to do. But, I mean, that's something that we could pull together in February after the bulk of the report itself is done. And, you know, we could do that among ourselves, really.
Right. That's exactly what I'm thinking. Maybe we sit down with Brett and a few others and say, hey, what really makes sense? What could, you know, we take to the clinician community and say, hey, does this make sense to you? Is there something here we missed? You know, those sorts of things.
Yeah, or, you know, just setting aside a half an hour or an hour at the January in-person meeting when we'll all be there. That would be another opportunity.
Yep, agreed.
So do we have anything else to say about interoperability, do you think?
Yeah, let me ask this question. You know, interoperability means, and I'm going to tee on what Brett said a minute ago, it sort of means a lot of things to a lot of people. Is there value in us also looking at these various topics and say how they affect a specific constituency? Case in point, what does interoperability mean to patients? You know, and I know that we have stakeholder groups listed here, but perhaps we look at not just what it means to them, but also what barriers they have had in the marketplace, you know, thus far. Case in point, you know, we listed on the privacy security slide, you know, the varying state laws that require different types of breach notification in case there's an oops, you know, those types of things. Is there a way to tie these subject areas together to each other to say, look, this isn't a standalone item. You know, there are various facets and issues here that tie together. Do you think there's a way to do that? So at the end of this, we have sort of a crosswalk of how many of these things intersect?
I think it's good to reference, to cross-reference things. I'd rather not commit to a specific writing structure without having given that some thought.
Sure. No, I'm just throwing ideas out there to just think about, just something to marinate on.
So when I'm looking at this side, I think of just the landscape. So what is what we're doing right now? I think what you're referencing would be more under the gap analysis, right?
I would agree, but I would also think even under the landscape, it, you know, they all sort of tie, because if someone says the landscape and content, you know, landscape analysis, content idea of the TEFS, all right, well, the TEFS has multiple components to it, obviously, that have been proposed. So how does that all tie together? So I you know, like the USCDI plays into the TEFS, you know, and so I just wonder, is there value in showing folks, and again, I'm just throwing this out on the wall to see if it sticks or not, is there value in showing how these things tie together or not? That's my question.
No, that's actually a good idea. Maybe we, and Carolyn, you mentioned this in your overview, looking at how, kind of deciding on how we put the different stakeholders in, maybe under each of the areas we could have just like a grid, or just as an exercise as we go through this for our own reference, where we have stakeholders listed and then we put kind of just some notes on the landscape for each individual stakeholder. And that might be even a sliding scale of super interoperability. Things are working for stakeholder A, but it might be less for another stakeholder. And that would be maybe a clear way for us to identify kind of the stakeholders that are not achieving interoperability as well, because I think we're going to see some really positive use cases where interoperability is happening very well, and then we're going to find that there are other stakeholders that it's just not.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's bullet lists, maybe it's some kind of basic diagram that, you know, has dashed and full lines, something that sort of shows a relationship. I would think that kind of format of such a thing would probably become more apparent as we get into the writing.
I agree. I agree. And I love that idea of kind of going into it that way and ranking them, because, you know, call it 2 years from now, we can look backwards and say, have we advanced a respective stakeholder group from a medium to a high interoperability, or whatever we want to call that measurement. And it gives us ways to kind of go back and sample and, you know, test the water of okay, did we achieve progress here, or are there other barriers that need to be addressed?
Yeah, that would definitely facilitate looking back at the benchmarks and baselines in future years. We can set something up that way.
Yeah, I really like the small, medium, large, however we want to term the measurement, because if ultimately this is to go to Congress to advise them, you know, we don't want just a landscape of what's happened, but, you know, where the gaps continue to be.
That's correct. No, that's exactly right. And in addition to, it also helps the community at large understand where there are barriers, you know, and it's, if I put my hospital CIO hat on, and I say that, okay, the community feels that a respective stakeholder group is not as interoperable as another, I'm able to now look at solutions or work with various vendor partners to say, hey, help me address this aspect that I intersect with. And it starts giving me a way to plan without getting hit in the head, you know, blindsided by, oh, man, I didn't know this was an issue. So there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, very well said.
All right, so we have this section. We want to go to another section now?
Yeah, let's go to the next topic, next set of topics.
All right, privacy and security. This is my favorite. so these are some items here, you know, that we thought of thinking about things. Are there other topics from privacy and security? I think the general answer is yes, but, you know, are there specifics that we know are front and center to health IT that is really that we need to put on here. Like I'll share one of Carolyn's comments when we were planning was around the privacy security protections for patient-generated health data. You know, how do we make sure that those are in place for the Fitbits, Apple Watches, or 23andMe's out there? You know, how do we look at that and how do we work through what those are? You know, so that, I think that's a very relevant in the news and in the forefront of considerations to think through. So are there other topics like that that we should be addressing?
I think it would be helpful in that particular sense. Excuse me. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I was just going to dovetail on that particular line item on the privacy security protection for patient-generated health data. Also, what's the patient's responsibility once the information leaves? You know, this is all new territory. We just finished with my organization, the Apple Health Record, and, you know, we had a little bit of, well, we didn't buy it, but buyer's remorse or thought going into saying, okay, once it leaves, how did we properly educate our patients on the fact that this isn't an app that we created, and now that it's downloaded, it's out of our control? And I guess I'm not really sure where I'm going with this as much to say, what's the responsibility once a patient receives this information? Because this is going to explode with Smart on Fire apps, at least for organizations like mine, where patients are going to now have this, which is fabulous. That's what we're working towards, but making sure they understand we're no longer protecting them once it's on their phone or wherever that information resides.
Right. Yeah, that brings up the whole question of how do we do patient education around what HIPAA covers and doesn't cover. I think it's probably not realistic or helpful to remind people to read the terms of service for their third-party app.
Yeah,
we don't do that for anything else. but I think that there's value in some discussion around this notion of how do we help patients and consumers and users of this data, like caregivers and family members, you know, understanding, becoming more aware of the fact that not everything is covered and there's value in understanding where data can go and what are some of the potential implications if it goes places you didn't think it was going or want it to go. I mean, we've talked about that in the full high tech too, and how we can incorporate that piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And when an app or an organization says your data is protected by this mechanism, does the average person understand what level of protection that provides them? Or should that be something that's mandated? You've got a certain level of protection on some of these apps. Just a lot of moving parts that make me nervous with patient data.
Yeah, and I'll go back to something I said in the first meeting, which was that there's some really great work that ONC and OCR did in previous FACAs to really try to synthesize this out. And I think maybe it's worthwhile sending some of this out. Caroline just sent you the final, you know, API task force recommendations from May 12th of 2016. And on page 43 and 44, and I can send this to everybody here on this call, you know, they did a great job putting this little crosswalk together of, you know, the technical actors, the patient, provider, the EHR system, you know, the roles, the operation, what rights and responsibilities, is HIPAA regulated or not regulated? And I think if we take this and continue iterating on it or asking for more clarification, Brett, to your questions there and some of those real-world examples that you have, this is where it really becomes helpful, because I literally took this a couple of years ago to our compliance chief and said, hey, as we're working with our vendors, we need to make sure that we put this as part of our risk assessment process to understand what the risks that we're accepting and dealing with respective BAs. So, you know, this is where it really gets the good stuff comes out. So just a consideration point, not to discount the work that's also been done before.
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful to hear that it's already been done to some extent.
You know, and that points up a potential recommendation in the report that HITECH look at some way of bringing all of that good work to the forefront and helping to make it more visible and more top of mind for both providers and for patients and consumers as we, you know, work down the path of getting the exchange framework and some of these other things in place, and we move from conceptual to starting to happen in the field. You know, because certainly the good work is there. It's a question of, I think, helping folks understand that we're now ready to use it, and oh, by the way, here it is. One other thought that I had around the PGHD, we don't want to forget the remote sensing data and applications, you know, things like in-home sensors and other stuff that's starting to mature. Maybe there's some telemedicine aspects there that we should be thinking about or should be considered by HITECH in the future.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great point.
It's not just mHealth.
I agree with all the comments that have been said so far. I think we should add a patient-generated health data topic under privacy and security, and I think it's one of those areas that, as you said, Brett, there's a lot of opportunity, but it's scary for providers right now. So if we can start looking at kind of mapping that out in this, I think it would be really helpful, especially as we progress into looking at more remote monitoring and telehealth.
Right. And so one of the basic concerns is if I don't understand as a provider some privacy issues, and I, you know, the patient says, hey, I've got this app, by law, I'm required to give them the data, but what's my requirements to educate them on what happens to their data with this particular app? I mean, what I've been trying to think about for our organization is, do we have some kind of vetting process to where we can say, if you need a antihypertensive app or a diabetic tracking app or whatever it might be, we've reviewed these from security to accuracy and effectiveness and sort of approved them, but I'm not sure that's even practical given the scope of what we're talking about happening in that space right now. But any thoughts on that, or if this is even pertinent to what we're talking about right now with privacy and security topics?
You know, this is my perspective on that. I think those questions that you just brought up are spot on, and I think, you know, there is a lot of industry head scratching as to where does the buck stop per se. And I think this is exactly the point of this landscape content idea section, is to say, hey, there are these types of questions that are sitting out there that are somewhat ambiguous that we need clarity on. And that's where the powers that be or HITECH can ask to look further into or research and those types of things. So, I don't have an answer, but I think that's exactly the point of this, is to look at and say, hey, there's an issue here we need to at some point address.
So I did a lot of work on this with my HIMSS Connected Health Committee within the last fiscal year, and we put together a market landscape on like what patient-generated health data would look like in a provider organization, from like really easy to implement, kind of just getting a survey out to patients without a whole bunch of technology to support it, all the way to kind of a scale of, we did 5 different buckets, kind of a progression for organizations to look at from really simple to really complex. And that really complex went to like complete use of patient-generated health data for analytical purposes and the whole gamut of where we aren't yet, but it allowed organizations to see kind of a step-by-step process. And one of the areas that we did have under there was questions around privacy and security. And I don't remember them all offhand. It's not necessarily my area, but I can pull that up and get it from HIMSS and send it out to this group. It could be just a good starting point, because we did talk to a lot of different stakeholders just to ask a lot of questions on what their concerns were. So it could be a good starting point for us.
Yeah, I would love to see that. Thank you.
That would be great.
Okay. So let's, in the interest of time, maybe let's go to the next section here. All right, so patient access to information topics. So blue button, data collection using mobile wearable, kind of exactly what we were just speaking about a minute ago, use and sharing of patient-generated health data and emerging platforms. What else? What are some of the other patient access to information topics or and progress?
Well, I suppose there's general usability, accessibility, I mean disability accessibility issues around patient portals. That feels like a topic that that's been around for a long time, but given that people are still indicating problems with them or performance issues are still being identified, you know, it probably shouldn't be ignored.
I would agree. Brett, let me ask you a question I'm thinking about on this topic. Are you seeing more of a use for social determinant data, you know, looking at the social media for emerging symptoms of the flu in a respective area and being able to, you know, staff up appropriately, seeing that may be coming before there is a public health bulletin put out there? Are you seeing any of that in the clinical realm?
I'm seeing a lot of interest in it right now. I think there are some organizations out there that are further along that continuum than we are that are actually doing it right now, but I think it's still sort of in a nascent state that, yes, we want to do that, and at least the major vendors, we're an Epic shop, but I know Cerner's got similar things, Allscripts, where those social determinants of health, we're building not just the patient's health record, but a broader than just the medical record, bringing in those social determinants. And then really trying to use that data in predictive analytics for, just like you said, whether it's staffing or even then with patient-generated data. I don't, as a provider, I don't want to see your Fitbit data in its raw form. I mean, it's just, wow, it may be neat to see that you could actually transfer it, but what am I going to do with it? However, if I could bring that into a data warehouse, run some analytics on it, and then present it when someone's activity level drops below a certain point, we know that they're maybe at risk for depression, and just being a case manager might call and check on them. You know, that's where we're on the cusp of those kinds of things exploding, and the social determinants of health and those factors that are coming in from community resources, that data, I think, becomes even more valuable. Right now, I think we're just, I would say we're in a theoretical phase moving towards that, but we should address it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And I mean, I see that as hitting multiple areas here, these four bullets that we have on here, but that's even a potential fifth one, which is that, you know, again, social determinant data or whatever we want to call it, which is beyond just patient-generated health data, because now it's sort of this aggregate community-based, this is what a lot of folks are saying towards a specific topic. So maybe something for us to consider is that, particularly if that's where the industry, I mean, and I'm hearing that's where the industry is going. So I would love to hear from the rest of the high tech what they think.
I agree.
And I think we need simple access in here as well. I mean, like just where we are, even with electronic health records. You know, my mom called me furious the other day because she had lab work done and she went into Health Vault and she's like, I hate Microsoft Health Vault. My labs aren't there. And my response to her was, well, it's not the technology's issue. Your provider didn't push it to Health Vault. So that's still happening. And that's a personal example. She was complaining about it yesterday to go into the whole story. But my point is, we're still not accessing, patients don't have access to their health information as in a way that we think that they do within our kind of tech bubble.
You're exactly right. And you know what? You're right. And I'm going to, you know what, this is actually another topic on here for this slide. It just came to my mind with your story. So thank you for sharing that. Health systems really don't have a great way of identifying accurately who that patient is. I mean, sure, you can send them an access code in their mail, you know, there's via snail mail or whatever to get into a portal. But, you know, really identification of the patient and understanding that this is really patient Aaron Neary that's trying to access this data so therefore I can transmit it to him or her, that's really an issue. So I don't know if that's a, you know, something we want to put on here or back on the privacy security considerations, but you know, accurate identification of the patient is key. And I would think, you know, Brad, correct me if I'm wrong here, you know, from a clinical perspective, you know, making sure that you're able to the right data is getting to the right person as you're giving a clinical diagnosis it's got to be important.
Oh, absolutely, it's critical. You're exactly right.
All right, so I know we're getting closer and closer to time here. Let's, unless there's any other comments on this, let's go to the next area. All right, gap analysis, interoperability topics here. And Lauren, how much time do we need to give the public? I want to be respectful of that as well.
So we're scheduled for just kind of open discussion until about 12:50 or so.
Okay, so we have time. So we have plenty of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, perfect. All right, good. Thank you for that. All right, so interoperability topics. We got expansion of the use cases to meet additional care settings, technology maturity. Again, this is gaps, right? So we're looking at gaps here for interoperability. Data quality and provenance, metrics for HIE exchange, and then incentives for change across stakeholder groups. What are some other topics here and concerns? All right, I'll start. All right, let's see here. So an interoperability gap, I can think off the top of my head that maybe we could consider is one around, we say incentives for change, but I would also go one step further and say financial metrics and financial reimbursement offer interoperability. I know there was some consideration for looking at a federal funding or CMS looking at a way to measure and make that as part of a multiplier or whatever else. So perhaps expanding upon that and continuing that work and really making it, meaningful exchange of data, I think would be helpful because the hospital community moves quickly, the healthcare community, not just hospital, the healthcare community moves quickly when there's a reimbursement tied to something.
Yeah, Aaron, that's a great point, particularly for the smaller offices that have smaller vendors. You know, they don't have any, their margin's so thin and they've used up all their meaningful use dollars to install this thing and maybe they were sold a bill of goods or not, but then when you're trying to maybe integrate with a CIN and their practice with it, you realize the data they bring to the front door is not in a form that's usable. And you know, if you could incentivize them to make those changes to become more interoperable, that could be very useful.
Yep. Another one that I can speak for. Go ahead. No, go ahead. Your turn. I'll go next.
No, it's fine. I was thinking that this would be a really good area for us to explore some of the kind of comments that were brought up with the TEF. I know there were, it goes along with what other people are just saying, but there are a lot of really positive feedback, but then really negative feedback. And it's kind of, because what we've uncovered is there are a lot of issues around some of the comments we've gotten on just business cases crossing state borders with information, and there's a whole slew of them. But I think diving into kind of the negative comments that we received on TEF would be really helpful here. And I'm kind of silent right now because I have a lot of thoughts on this and I'm thinking of where to start, but I will volunteer to help on this section in our report and come back with better thoughts.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of the specifics related to telemedicine because that's certainly advancing and I think it's fair to say that we're going to be seeing more of that going forward. I mean, you would think the data is just the data, and if we're using the accepted standards, then it shouldn't be an issue, but trying to recall if I've heard something about something inherent in telemedicine systems that can make that more complex or potentially not feasible, interoperability, I mean.
Well, I can speak to direct. Yeah, so I can speak to direct knowledge of implementing telemedicine from my respective previous lives of health systems. One was just making sure that, you know, dosaging and weight and scale was appropriate for the patient. You know, I've been in both pediatric and adult care. It's amazing how many times a respective med is perhaps entered in for the wrong weight or the wrong type of dosage or the wrong strength, which impacts clinical care. And it kind of goes back to identification of the patient accurately. And so there's a lot of things when it comes back to data and data quality, which we already have listed here, that really impacts interoperability, because it's that, you know, the appropriate clinical prerogative to make sure before you, you know, commit an order or you know, create a med or order a med, to make sure that it's appropriate for Aaron and that the right dosaging and weight. And so once you get into the world of like pediatric telemedicine, it gets even more complicated. So there's a lot of things here that standardization will really help with, which we address here in data quality, data provenance. But that's been, to your question, that's been my experience that really hung us up that we had to work through. What other topics? All right, we'll go to the next one. Privacy
so
and security.
On the,
okay,
on the interoperability, should we also add like infrastructure?
When you say infrastructure, what do you mean?
Infrastructure is referenced on the patient access information slide two slides forward, but do we need to broaden that or make it to cover that third bullet point there? I'm sorry. Is it on the previous slide? I saw infrastructure a second ago, but anyway, it's on one of these slides. And I'm wondering if that has to do also, it was with net neutrality. But I'm wondering if that needs to be broadened to include more groups. Is it mentioned? It's framed as a patient issue, but maybe it's broader than that.
That's a thought. That's a really good thought. It could include that.
If patients in rural areas don't have the bandwidth, you know, to be doing some things, can we say that that's an issue that affects only patients and not the providers and health system entities as well? Probably not.
No. You're going to have providers who actually don't even have self-service.
I mean, I literally was just speaking with a very large provider in the upper Midwest that serves multiple states, and some of the providers they're trying to connect to in a very rural part of the country literally have nothing, and it's almost impossible for them to, you know, access a medical record remotely, much less provide telemedicine. So to your point, if we're talking about infrastructure as in, you know, broadband, fiber optic, whatever capability, I would totally agree. And I think a lot of systems that are doing, you know, heroic work for rural parts of our country are just, they're sort of stuck. They don't have options.
Yeah. Okay, there's the infrastructure. It's the fourth bullet point there. I knew I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, so it's not just patient, right? But I think you're right. It's everything. We we can leave it on here, but I think infrastructure probably needs to go on multiple slides. And that was my point earlier about these things tying together. A lot of the issues are affecting multiple categories.
Yeah, I mean, interoperability is an obvious one also. It doesn't matter if you can read the data on both sides if you don't have the bridge to move it.
That's exactly right, which actually may help us as we put this together to look at and say, hey, if you have a topic, let's pick on infrastructure, that affects multiple dimensions, that this is obviously a topic we should prioritize as critical. And maybe we look at in detail first as a committee and sort of starts giving us a priority listing of if infrastructure, if we all agree that infrastructure is a major issue that is inhibiting health IT across multiple dimensions, that should be a topic that we really focus heavily on. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Agree.
That may be something to call out in the executive summary also.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about patient access, though. What else? So what else about patient access beyond infrastructure are issues today that we can think of?
Well, I mean, health literacy, visual literacy, numeracy, but I'm struggling to think about how we frame those within something that is within ONC's responsibility to address. Obviously, we recognize their problems. It's good for providers to offer clear communication, to be clear about what they see as provider responsibilities versus patient responsibilities, et cetera. But ONC is not really a patient education organization.
Well, let me challenge you a little bit on that, Carolyn, because I agree with you. There's a lot of responsibility on the patient. But ONC really put together a fabulous patient education website. I want to say it was last year, because I remember talking about it at the policy committee. They rolled it out, and I know it's got to still be up, but they actually go into talking about different dimensions of, as a patient, you should know this, and this is what this means, and this is what this means. Maybe this is an opportunity to highlight some of that work and or highlight areas that they can continue working on, because they did start that process.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I just mean that it's not one of ONC's specific charges to go out and educate patients. It works and has other charges that have the consumer patient focus.
I do think education and awareness is a major gap, though, and it's kind of this whole culture shift of patients having a right to be part of the healthcare system. And even if it's not something that ONC can do, I think highlighting it in the report as a gap could be really helpful.
And yep. Just for reference, that's the ONC patient engagement playbook.
There it is, yep.
Point to as a resource or reference.
So maybe another appendix section is a section on existing ONC resources and how they support the work that's done to date and the recommendations for future work. I mean, we would certainly intersperse some of these things throughout the writing of the report, but having a collection of them in one place is a sort of a reminder, like, yeah, here's your go-to stuff. Because I know that the website's gotten fairly large and complex, and there have been some changes. Not everything is where I used to see it. So it probably wouldn't hurt.
I think that's a great idea. And it would be good to have that in the appendix so that if there are curious members that get the final report that actually are like, well, let's just see what's been going on. They know right where to go. Because to the point I've been saying, there's been some fabulous work that's been done.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, what else? What are the topics on this one? All right. Maybe next section then.
Aaron, this is Michelle. Did you want to talk about the privacy and security gaps as well? I think we skipped over by accident.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes. There you go. Perfect. All right. Privacy security gaps. Variability in information sharing. We should kind of spoke about a little earlier. HIPAA and 42 CFR Part 2, which is a substance disorder. Granular levels of consent. We talked about GDPR, Consumer Privacy Act, and widespread adoption of cybersecurity frameworks. And that, what bullet is that? The sixth one there really speaks to the continuing the focus that the Cybersecurity Task Force and other Health IT Standards Committee and the Policy Committee, you know, point to NIST as an excellent framework to focus on. So continuing that emphasis of NIST or other frameworks that the committee finds appropriate, you know, those sorts of things. I just want to kind of clarify in granular detail what that bullet means. But the importance of that the health systems must have good cyber hygiene and following the framework of something. So are there other privacy security topics that we can think of that should go on this for just discussion and ideation?
We don't mention social media here. Maybe we don't need to call it out in particular, but I think that it certainly wouldn't hurt for consumers and patients to have some better awareness of settings and how to go about changing settings in, say, mHealth apps and other things that they might use specifically to manage their health. I wouldn't say just in general Instagram or some other general platforms that aren't health specific necessarily, although you might have some uses of those platforms that are health specific. But
so maybe we could term that as a patient education on privacy and security, just in general, and we could talk about all kinds of social hygiene and other dimensions.
Yep. Yeah. You know, the notion that you don't just download an app, that it's a two-part function where you download the app and then you go into the preferences or whatever they're calling it and look at what it wants to do with data and be sure that you've got things checked off that aligns with what you want to do with data, where you want it to go. You know, is it made public? Sometimes you can't control where the transmission is, but you can often control whether it's publicly visible or only private or only to users that you're connected to, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep, that's a good thought. Other topics? Okay. Let's go on then. Next, I think, have we gone through all the sections now? Let's see, stakeholder groups. There we go. Are there other stakeholder groups here that should be an organizing principle? We sort of talked about this earlier. But look at these stakeholder groups, and have we captured that accurately? Are there others that we're missing? And or should they be termed something else?
Well, we don't have behavior health providers on here. We don't have the LT PACs. I think one of the things that we kind of identified when we were working on the USCDI is that there are a lot of stakeholders. We started coming up with a list of stakeholders, and I think it got to be over 20. So I think that we need to almost have in here something like emerging stakeholders where we bundle them all in together. So it's kind of like anybody outside of the normal players, how are we looking at how we're going to expand? I don't know. I hesitate on this because I think there are a growing number of stakeholders. But then do we want to stick with the main players? I don't know.
Would it be possible to include, to have like an ACE category here, emerging stakeholders, and then just have a sentence or two that lists that broader list that you came up with in the other environment? You know, stakeholders who may potentially play a more significant role in the future or something along those lines.
Yeah. And also it can be kind of how we define providers. So, you know, there are our traditional providers when we think of the EHR program, which are the ones that are more like the ones that are eligible for meaningful use incentives. But then there's a growing group of providers outside of that spectrum that ONC has identified as really important parts of the ecosystem as well. So I just don't want to miss that.
That's a great point. I think it's worth at least addressing because, you know, as time goes on, there could be a minor stakeholder that suddenly becomes a major stakeholder in the future. That's just, you know, we just don't see it yet. So if there are these groups that we feel should be lumped together, at least to just at least put on here, that's not a bad idea. An emerging stakeholder group is not a bad idea.
Yeah, another one that comes to mind just as, you know, as an example are kind of some of the nonprofits, especially nonprofits that are disease specific, and this goes beyond just research purposes, but like groups that are, I'm going to give an example. I've worked with the Immune Deficiency Foundation, and they reached out to all of their kind of patients across the country and asked, well, what do you want? And they wanted, the patients wanted a place to access all of their health information. And full disclosure, it's my old company, Gero Health portal, they used it, but they couldn't really achieve what they wanted to, what they set out to achieve, because they didn't have access to health information and data from the multiple providers across the country. So they've actually been stifled by the lack of interoperability, but have they're a smaller nonprofit with only so much voice and lobbying power. So when I think of those groups that are trying to be more progressive and do things, I think we need to also think about them in, because there are a lot of them if you add them up. They're one, but if you take all of the patient groups out there, if we can actually make it so that they have access to health information on a broad level, I think we're going to see some really cool things happen.
I think the other thing that an emerging stakeholder category does is it holds to the spirit that the HITACs had and that we've had in all of our discussions, that we want everybody's voice to be heard, and we may forget somebody, but if we have that emerging category, I think it goes a long way towards just the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. And I agree. That is a goal of this, is to make sure that this is totally inclusive. So I totally agree with the spirit of that. Okay. Any other topics on this?
I think this is the last slide before we go into public comment.
Okay.
If there are no, then we could circle back and maybe just in the last few minutes talking about just the work plan and the schedule, if there are any other questions there. So at this time, operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Again, that is star 1 to make a public comment at this time.
Thanks. And operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
We have none at this time.
Okay. So why don't we, so Erin, I'll turn it back over to you. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to wrap up on the topic areas, or if Carolyn, you want to spend a few minutes just kind of reviewing the work plan again, since this will be our last opportunity to meet before we have the high-tech meeting in September.
Yeah, I think it's worth for Carolyn to go one more time through the work plan. I don't have any comments.
So what we'll be doing in September at our in-person meeting here in a couple of weeks is just updating the full committee, you know, the kind of running through a lot of what we talked about today, but probably not every bit of it in every detail, just to sort of let them know what's ahead and what they can expect. We should be thinking about and expecting to see and be ready to work on a draft around September 20 ourselves of this landscape analysis. We've identified a number of interesting and potentially very helpful ideas today. I'm thinking probably ONC staff will compile that into some sort of list for Erin and I, and maybe we will be sending that out as an email to others on the committee, you know, to start thinking about who wants to take on what or work with the ONC resource person to start developing some of those sections. I mean, it's fine that there will be a month there, but time moves quickly, and when school starts and we get back into medical meeting season, you know, that time can go pretty quickly. In terms of the high-tech, in the virtual meeting in October, we will want to have our landscape analysis finalized. So again, there's some work time there, but you know, we don't want to let that go too long. We will have that a gap analysis for us to be working on, a draft of that in early October, and then that also gets presented to the full high-tech in October at the virtual meeting. In the meantime, we'll be working on outlining the progress report for ourselves and need to try to get through a draft of that for us to review and improve by about the 1st of November. The AMIA meeting is typically like November 2nd or 3rd, I think, through the 7th or 8th, but we're losing a good chunk of time there just in terms of our own personal commitments, because we've got to bring that the final draft of that progress report to the high-tech committee at the virtual meeting on the 14th of November. So that may be another time when we're a little tight. So in terms of the full report, we'll continue working on that ourselves through November and looking at a draft in December. And then the full high-tech reviews the final iteration of the annual report at a meeting in January. So we have time. We don't need to be panicked, but I think it's good to keep these deadlines in mind, and when we see the opportunity to try to push forward with something, so as these other events like meetings and travel come up, you know, we don't find ourselves working at 2 in the morning, which is not usually the best time to edit or come up with innovative ideas. Did you have any additional thoughts, Erin?
No, I think you're spot on. And there'll be a lot of work done, I think, via email as well as we come up with different drafts and stuff. And then you said this earlier, Carolyn, if we need to consider calling another meeting at some point in between these dates for whatever reason, you know, we'll talk to the team and figure out when that works.
Yeah, I mean, one of the nice things is that if we push to try to go forward with our drafts, we can do it all or largely all asynchronously by email, which tends to work a lot better in terms of people's personal schedules and, you know, having a chance to read something or draft something and let it sit for a day or two before you go back to it and make any additional adjustments. We do have that option also.
Yep.
So I know we're just a few minutes early. Anything else, either Aaron or Carolyn, or I'll check in, Michelle, did we hit on everything that we wanted to today?
I'm good, Carolyn.
No, I think we had a really good discussion. Lots of good ideas, things we hadn't conceived of earlier, and I'm really looking forward to this. We've done some of the really good planning work. We're in a good place to go forward.
Okay. Sounds good. So with that, I think we can adjourn, and we will see each other relatively soon in the next couple of weeks, and then we're also looking forward to our first draft later in September.
Great. So
thanks, everyone.
Fantastic. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.